This is 88.9 FM KUCI, broadcasting from the University of California in Irvine. And this is Tani Tanuviel with What Would Arwen Do? And this is a show about if a Middle Earth elf lived in Southern California, what might her life look like? How might she celebrate and support the arts and music and all kinds of creativity in the world? So my heart and passion with this show is to bring hope and courage to those who have musical gifts or creative talents, that they would not lose hope and they would find a way to manifest that in the world. So please stay with me. I'm doing a special show this morning called Editors on Editing. I have two very special guests, Mary DiStefano, editor of Victorian Homes magazine, and BJ Taylor, a freelance writer and contributing editor of Guidepost. You'll hear a little bit more about that coming right up, but please stay with us for What Would Arwen Do?
The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show or other programs on KUCI, please log on to KUCI.org for the latest program schedule.
Darling, you say you want to write a book? Well, then you must listen to Writers on Writing, darling. Authors, literary agents gabbing and babbling about the art and the business of writing. Thursdays, 5 p.m. Darling, you must. Barbara DeMarco Barrett, she hosts. Yeah, listen, darling.
On KCI FM in Irvine.
And this is 88.9 FM, KUCI. This is Tani Tanuviel this morning with What Would Arwen Do? And my show this morning is inspired by Barbara DeMarco Barrett. One of the things I absolutely love about being part of KUCI and the KUCI community is the great public affairs programming that we have here. Barbara's show, Writers on Writing, which is on Thursdays, has been such a great help for me. I even took her one of her extension courses here at UC Irvine, which was absolutely wonderful. And she has a great book called Pen on Fire. And I love Barbara because her show is all about, well, it's called Writers on Writing. So she's always promoting other writers. She has agents, publishers, authors on her show. But she rarely promotes her own work. And so I love having the opportunity to let people know about what she does being in the world as an author and an editor, and also as an encouragement and inspiration to those of us who are aspiring authors or editors. And this morning I have two very special in-studio guests that I'm very excited about. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about these two ladies. I am so excited. And this morning I really want the show to be all about them. So let me just tell you. Mary DiStefano, who is the editor of Victorian Homes magazine. She's also contributing editor of Romantic Homes magazine, former editor of The Word for Today. She's also worked for Focus on the Family. Her magazine background includes Brio, Breakaway, Crafts, So News, Rotor, Wing, Shooting Times. Anyway, she has quite a list of things, and I also know that this woman is an incredible writer because she's actually part of a writing group that I belong to, and I have had, so I love Mary because she is going to bring to us kind of the both sides of the coin, both as writer and editor, and her website, just so you know, I'll be talking about this a little bit more later, is Mary DiStefano, and that's MerrieDiStefano.com. And you can get more information about Mary as the delightful person that she has married. Just say hi. You don't get to say too much because I know you. Say hello.
Hi, everybody. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for being here. And my other guest is BJ Taylor. And BJ is passionate about Writers Group and is a member of three. She self-published a booklet titled Successful Writers Don't Write Alone, How to Develop a Successful Writers Group, which is available through her website. And that is www.click, that's C-L-I-K dot T-O slash BJ Taylor. It's BJTAYLOR. BJ is a guidepost special correspondent and writer, and one of 15 writers chosen from more than 3,000 entries, BJ was invited to attend the much sought after writers workshop in Rye, New York. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Her publication and credits include guideposts, numerous chicken soup books. I love her chicken soup book entries. Writer's Digest and Lexis Magazine, as well as a she also had a contribution, having a little trouble with the mouth this morning, to John Gray's Mars and Venus in Love. BJ, would you say hi?
Hello.
Okay, this morning I want... I love these women. They're so incredible. But I want to hear from you guys. People hear from me all the time. This show, again, was inspired by... Actually, I had you guys on a few weeks ago on Barbara's show, Writers on Writing, as part of the writers group. And so we got to share. That was on Thanksgiving, was it not?
Yes.
It was wonderful. We had so much fun, except the fact that, you know, my microphone, no one could hear me.
But you know what? Guess what? Everybody can hear you this morning, and you sound wonderful. Well, I want to just talk a little bit, because I love the fact that both of you actually are writers and editors. And my whole thing for this morning in doing the show, Editors on Editing, is for aspiring writers and editors out there, because if they want to write, they need to write, but they're also going to have to work with an editor. So I'm going to just kind of go back and forth here, and I also want both of you to just kind of jump in with anything, because we could do an entire quarter, actually, on this whole topic of editors on editing,
right.
But we have 45 minutes. So, Mary, I think I'm going to talk to you first a little bit about your role as the editor of Victorian Homes Magazine,
right.
And as a contributor. One thing, and I'd like both of you to comment a little bit about this, because I think people get confused about the title contributing editor,
because
that actually means writer, sort of.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, I'm the contributing editor for Romantic Homes. Basically, what I do there is I write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may come up with a story idea. It may be accepted. It might not. But that's basically my role on that magazine, is however that editor needs to use me, I'm there to help her. But as the editor of Victorian Homes Magazine, I'm more the visionary. I'm the one that decides and plans the editorial calendar for the entire year. That means I really have to have a close handle on who my reader is. I have to know who they are and what they want, and then I have to supply that. I also have to be able to work closely with who our advertisers are and make sure that the content that I have is something that is going to be easy for them to kind of latch on to and figure out if they want to advertise in it. I decide what photographers we're going to use. I decide what writers we're going to use. I give people deadlines. I make sure we keep the deadlines. When the stories come in, I actually I have a staff, but we all work on the editing. I work very closely with the art director, deciding the look of the magazine. We're right now going through a redesign, and so we work very closely. You know, I'll tell her what I think, how it should look, and then she goes and she does that, and it's actually so fun. I love it.
And you're so good at it. Can I just ask you, too, for those aspiring writers out there, because now you are the editor, but how did you kind of start out? What type of work did you do to kind of get to where you were? Did you start out in the mailroom?
It is so bizarre the way I got where I am today. I have about 19 years in the publishing industry, but the first half of my career or more, I was a graphic designer and illustrator and did that for a long time. You know, worked on a lot of different magazines and different types of projects. Then I developed carpal tunnel and I couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, my.
And so thought, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? Lots of prayer, lots of soul searching. And I had always enjoyed writing, had always done a lot of writing. But I took a little hiatus and went and was an interior designer for 3 years, which plays wonderfully into what I'm doing now.
Yes, because you have to design
the
layouts for these photo shoots.
But in the interim, I had taken a class in graphic design, and one of the things we did during that class was to design a promotional piece. And the promotional piece I designed in that class was a little book. And after I was done with the class, I submitted that little book to a publishing company, Thomas Nelson. They loved it, and they asked me to do four. And so I, on contract, I did four, wrote, illustrated, designed, did the whole, you know, nine yards. Unfortunately, those poor little books never got actually printed, but I got paid for it and that was good. And I was able to stay home for 2 years and write. So that was kind of my segue into the editorial world. After that, I got a job as the editor, for editor and publisher at The Word for Today, mm-hmm. which is a radio and broadcasting ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith. And then when I left there, I came to, at that time it was called Y Visionary. Now it's APG Media. But slowly worked my way up. I was senior editor, and now I'm the editor, and I love it so much. I love being editor. So
great. Well, and I want to talk to BJ, too, because yes. you're a contributing editor, and you also work as a freelance writer now. Mm-hmm. BJ, I mean, Mary actually works for a publisher. So you do some writing, but you also are employed. Whereas BJ, you do freelance writing and you are a contributing editor for Guidepost. Tell us a little bit about that, about how that works, being a freelance writer and also, like, you know, contributing editor, I think is sometimes a confusing phrase because
yes, people wonder what that is. And a contributing editor is just like you said, Tawny, it is a writer who contributes stories to magazines, and sometimes they're accepted, sometimes they're not, but you're contributing. When your story is accepted, then you are listed as, oftentimes you're listed as a contributing editor in the magazine's masthead. But you are a freelance writer. That's what you're doing. You're not on any payroll. You're not receiving any checks except for when your submissions are accepted and published. So that's actually what I do for Guideposts is I submit stories. I go out on assignment and interview and then submit the story for publication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, didn't you just do a kind of, and it's very exciting. I love, didn't you just do
yes.
something kind of exciting?
Yes, I
Tell
did.
Us about that.
I actually went up to Oakland. I flew into Oakland from Long Beach Airport Wednesday morning, early flight, rented a car, drove up to San Rafael, and interviewed a gentleman for a story for Guideposts. Him and his dog were involved in an accident. He had rescued his little dog 2 weeks earlier, and the dog ended up rescuing him when he went for help after they had tipped over in their SUV, and he was pinned inside for almost 8 hours. So the dog was able to rescue him right back. So it was a really great story. I ended up coming back home that same evening, and it was a great interview. It was a wonderful experience. And those are the type of things I do for Guideposts is go out on assignment and interview people. Then I gather the information and bring it all together and then write the story. Many times you get a lot of information when you're researching a story. You'll get it from the internet, or maybe you're interviewing, or you're on the phone gathering information, and you get a lot more than you can use. So you have to glean down and edit that information into the story that the readers want to hear and read. So many times you have to self-edit quite a bit. You have to decide what is the nuggets and what's golden in the story.
Mm-hmm. And Mary, I think, because this kind of goes along with what you're saying, as far as how... Well, let's kind of get into some of the things even then, mm-hmm. kind of drive editors crazy. And with regards to people that want to write, you know, mm-hmm. because like BJ was saying, you have a lot more information than you can possibly
right.
use, and yet publications have mm-hmm. Limitations as to what mm-hmm. they can do. Could you mm-hmm. talk to us a little bit about, and even for young aspiring writers to encourage them, if they want to get their work published, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that they need to really consider seriously?
Right. Well, first of all, there's something I want to say, and that is that from an editor's perspective, our contributing editors, our contributing writers, we love them dearly. I can't even begin to tell you how important their role is in our magazine. There's no way we can produce everything that needs to be done in the magazine, that we can write all the stories, or that we have the time or the brains to come up with all the ideas. And they bring so much to our magazine. We absolutely need them. And I'm very fortunate. I love the contributing editors that I have on my magazine. They're so wonderful.
About how many do you have, just kind of generally
speaking? I'm going to say maybe 8 to 10 that work for us pretty regularly. Less in the month of December because we have more features that deal with Christmas. But about 8 to 10, but I actually have others, you know, maybe 15 to 20 totally that supply us with ideas and things on a regular basis. And some of the people that submit to us, because we're a very visually driven magazine, are photographers. So we have photographers that submit things to us also. But what was it you wanted to know again?
Well, I bet the audience who's listening wonders, how can I be one of those? How can I be a contributing editor?
Right.
How can I do that? So,
I'll tell you one way, and this is just one way, and that is study the magazine. Figure out what it is the magazine has. Mm-hmm. And then look at it very carefully and think, what don't they have? Mm-hmm. I honestly think one of the best things, and startup magazines are incredible because they don't have their staffs totally in place right now. Mm-hmm. If you go to Barnes & Noble, you go to Borders, you would not believe how many startup magazines there are out there today. Every time I go, I see a magazine that I've never seen before. So those are a great place to start. But look at what they've got and then start thinking, what don't they have? Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I would put together a potential column or a potential department, mm-hmm. maybe write one sample story, mm-hmm. Good word count would probably be somewhere between 500 to 1,000 words. If it's longer than that, they might not be able to fit it. And then just submit it, because once you get a regular gig with a magazine, you're like gold. Right. So that's a great way to get your foot in the door.
And it's good for the writer, and it's good for the magazine, because the magazine has something that they know that they can count on.
Right.
They know that they can count on that writer to provide that. And let's talk a little bit about that too, because I know, the writer part of me, is like my baby. This mm-hmm. is my heart and soul and passion. And I can get very attached to that. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you're writing for publications, there's that part of you that's there, but there's also, the part of it that you're writing for a publication. Mm-hmm. And so there's the balance of your own creativity and your ideas and your personal style and everything, mm-hmm. but it's got to work for the publication. Can you both talk a little bit about that? You, Mary, as someone who works with lots of different writers, and what it's like to, what are the types of writers or editors you like to work with? And then I'd like BJ for you to kind of jump in too, just mm-hmm. as being a little bit on the receiving end of being a contributing editor and what happens to your story mm-hmm. when it goes through. So
I think it's really important for writers, aspiring writers, to realize that if you want to make money, it's a business mm-hmm. and you have to approach it like a business. If you want to write a personal essay or you want to write a piece of fiction or something, go ahead and do that. But when you're stepping into the nonfiction market and you're submitting articles, you have to be able to let the editor of the magazine take that and tweak it, and you just have to let go of it because you're making money. Right. You're getting paid, and that's the bottom line. But I think you asked what things we don't like. Is that mm-hmm. what you're asking?
Yeah, just because sometimes I think, if you stop and think about it, how do you pick which right. editors or which authors that you would rather work with?
Exactly. There's no way around it. First impressions mean so much. Mm-hmm. The first time you contact an editor, be polite. Even if you've been writing for that magazine for 10 years, if there's a new editor, you're kind of like on probation. Mm-hmm. So you've got to realize, and editors come and go at a frequent rate. So first impressions mean a lot. Some people seem to think, I see these, submissions and letters in other magazines, but some people seem to think that every company across the board right now is just so savvy with online submissions. And why don't people, write back to me when I submitted online or I sent them this email, I did that. You have no idea sometimes how hard it is to keep track of your emails when you're getting maybe 75 a day or something like that. And so if you, as a writer, have made a submission, I would just suggest don't follow up with a phone call and say, well, I sent you the email right back to me. It's like, who are you? I need to know contact information. I would always include contact information with any phone call, with any email, because that's just 10 minutes out of my day that I have to spend mm-hmm. Looking up that person's phone number, or maybe I don't even have it. Please be patient. Either you're right for the magazine or you're not. But if you're impatient, you probably aren't right for the magazine. But those are just some real simple things. So,
and I think some thing too for people to consider, just with regards to rejections. A lot of times, writers, we love our work and, we put our heart and soul into it. And yet someone says, sorry, this isn't what we're looking for. And I would like for writers just to remember that it's not always that the piece is not good mm-hmm. or it's just sometimes it just doesn't fit for the publication
right.
or it doesn't
exactly.
fit for the issue that they have openings for. Or sometimes you can have a really great idea and they've maybe just done a story on mm-hmm. that topic, you know, in the previous issue. So there are lots of reasons, in a sense, why things might get rejected or might get shelved. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily that the piece is not good.
Right.
But again, I think that's where what you're saying, Mary, is very important. If you want to write for a certain type of writing, like say for people that would want to write for Romantic Homes or Victorian Homes magazine, mm-hmm. to study the publication, to know what types of topics they have. If they just did a whole series on teacups mm-hmm. and they finished it, don't send in an article about teacups.
Right. Oh, another thing that I think is important to know is, as you're studying a magazine, if you notice that there's a department mm-hmm. that runs on a regular basis and it's usually written by a particular author, and you submit a story for that department, chances are the magazine isn't going to accept it because they've already got somebody plugged in right. for that particular piece. They might, but I just have to say, you know, come up with another concept. Don't mm-hmm. try to take the department away from someone who already is doing a good job. So,
yeah. And BJ?
I would suggest that as far as dealing with the rejection, that is something that every writer has to accept.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I prefer to call it non-acceptance. Rejection yeah. is just such
a better...
Yeah, it's a better term, and it's not so tearing and feels so bad. But one of the things I think that every writer should remember is to go back to the basics. If you really want to be published in a magazine, make sure that you submit professionally, that you're not using any colored papers or fancy fonts or cute enclosures trying to get an editor's attention. Just keep it very professional.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mary would agree that that is the way that they would like
oh,
to see
yeah,
things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Whether it's an email submission or it's a snail mail submission, mm-hmm. you do want to keep it professional mm-hmm. and in a business format. Always. And mm-hmm. when you do submit, do back off. Like Mary said, give the editor time. Even if the writer's market that you looked up in says it takes 2 months for a reply, wait an extra month or so. Editors are very, very busy and they do need time to sift through things. Remember that SASE, if you're sending by snail mail, you do want to send a self-addressed stamped envelope so that they can reply to you. But do give them time. Definitely.
Yeah. Sometimes one of the things that comes up is the topic of simultaneous submissions. You know, submitting an article to more than, you know, because sometimes, you know, you have an article idea and you submit it somewhere in 3 months. And then after 3 months, it's like, well, this can be kind of old news. How do you, both of you feel, what has been the experience with regards to simultaneous submissions? Mary, of course, just as a publisher.
With us, it probably wouldn't be a story. It would probably be film, because film is what drives most of our stories. Gosh, that would just be horrible if somebody submitted to us and then we turned around and wanted to use it and they submitted it to someone else. But we're a little bit different. You know, most of the people that submit to us, we already have a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be tricky because I think that happened one time with Romantic Homes that somebody submitted and by the time that they went to run the story, it turned out they had actually published it someplace else. They ran in both magazines. So I guess just be honest. Not that you have to be honest that you are submitting it to someone else,
right.
but when it's time when they say, okay, let's publish it, if you have published it someplace else, you need to let them mm-hmm. know.
Oh, so, yeah.
And if you're going to simultaneously submit, it's best to submit to non-competing markets or change the story mm-hmm. enough so that if one publication does pick it up and you've submitted it somewhere else, it's pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a different slant on different mm-hmm. things. Say your teacup story,
right.
you know, how you use it in this way versus that way,
right.
and submit it to non-competing markets. So you could submit it to a major women's magazine and also a local newspaper in
mm-hmm.
a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't try to submit it to the same type of magazines at the same time
because
right. you could get in a sticky situation.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a little break here just for a little station ID, and we're going to be right back with our guests again today. My guests are Mary DiStefano, editor of Victorian Homes Magazine, and Mary does have a website, very fun. Actually, both these girls have really fun websites. Her website is marydistefano.com, and that's M-E-R-R-I-E. DiStefano.com. And my other guest, BJ Taylor, who is the special correspondent writer for Guidepost Magazine and also author of a booklet entitled Successful Writers Don't Write Alone. And her website is www.click, and that's CLIK.TO/BJTaylor, TAYLOR. And you can find more information about what BJ does. She also has some great contributions to Chicken Soup Books. So anyway, we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be right back. This is Tani Tenuviel with a special edition of What Would Arwen Do?, our special edition show, Editors on Editing Today.
The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show or other programs on KUCI, please log on to KUCI.org for the latest program schedule.
Darling, you say you want to write a book? Well, then you must listen to Writers on Writing, darling. Authors, literary agents gabbing and babbling about the art and the business of writing. Thursdays, 5 p.m. Darling, you must. Barbara DeMarco Barrett, she hosts. Yeah, listen, darling.
On KCI FM in Irvine.
This is 88.9 FM KUCI, broadcasting from the University of California in Irvine. And this is Tani Tenuviel, resident Middle Earth elf of KUCI. And in case you're just tuning in, this is a special edition of What Would Arwen Do? Editors on Editing, inspired by Barbara DeMarco Barrett's program here on KUCI that's on, on Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. No, 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays. And Barbara has been just an incredible inspiration to me. If you want to write a book or articles or something, please do yourself a favor and tune into Barbara's program. Also, Barbara has a website, www.penonfire.com. Barbara has a book called Pen on Fire, which I absolutely love, A Busy Woman's Guide to Igniting the Writer Within. However, it is not just for women, but she has all kinds of hints for jump-starting your writing, getting rid of writer's block, how to just where writers work, and exercises. And so anyway, if you, this is just a great book by Barbara DeMarco about Pen on Fire. Barbara also teaches extension classes here at UC Irvine. So please check out her website at www.penonfire.com. And so back here in studio this morning with my special guest, I love that my guest today, Mary DiStefano, who is editor of Victorian Homes Magazine, contributing editor of Romantic Homes Magazine, and also BJ Taylor, who is a freelance writer. She's a special correspondent and writer for Guidepost Magazine, and also she has self-published a booklet entitled Successful Writers Don't Write Alone, How to Develop a Successful Writers Group. And actually, I'm part of a writers group that BJ kind of started for us, and well, Mary is too.
A successful writers group.
A successful writers group. And so anyway, on the second half of our show here, what I'd like to do, what did I say that I wanted to do?
You wanted to get us tea and cookies.
How to break into writing.
There's going to be snacks.
How to break into publication.
I know we were supposed to have snacks this morning.
Snacks.
I do have some limbas in my bag here, some little elfish whey bread, especially if you like spirulina. but yes, that's what I'd like to do is to talk a little bit about how to break into writing. BJ, I'd like for you to talk a little bit too about just how to breaking into publications. Yes,
right.
And then Mary, I'd like for you to talk a little bit after that too about the difference kind of between breaking into publications, like you were talking about, you know, some startup magazines, and then, because sometimes people just kind of automatically want to go straight to the top. So, BJ, could you share a little bit about your experience in this?
Sure. When you first get started and you have a number of, stories that you'd like to submit or ideas, first of all, learn your craft. Take classes at local community colleges, go to writers' conferences, wherever you can learn how to master your craft and get good at your writing. Mm-hmm. Joining a writer's group will definitely help you, and I think we're going to go into that later too. But then once you get your craft down pat and you're comfortable with your stories and you like what you've written, then just start submitting everywhere. Look mm-hmm. up in the Writer's Market, which is a big publication, comes out every year, mm-hmm. and there's numerous places to submit your writing. Start out just submitting everywhere you want. If you want to take on the big guys, that's fine, but I would suggest you start with the little smaller publications. They're more likely to take on a new freelance writer than the bigger ones are. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to just submit. Get your writing out there. Just submit everywhere that you can, and don't be afraid to do it. Take that step and get your writing out there for people to look at, because it can't get published if you don't send it out. Once I started a writer's group 10 years ago, none of us were published. There were 8 of us in the group, and now, 10 years later, we're still together. That's one of my writer's groups, and everyone has been published. And the support, encouragement, and motivation of helping each other get over those rejection letters you get, every time you submit something doesn't mean it's going to be published, mm-hmm. but that's okay, because if you get it back, you can say, all right, who's the next one I want to send it right. to? And send it right back out again. Or if they've written, if an editor has taken the time to write on your letter that they've returned in your self-addressed stamped envelope saying, great story, great writing, just doesn't fit with our magazine right now. Or, gee, you could change it a little bit this way or that way. Take that to heart and really think about it, revise it, and send it out again somewhere else. And if you keep doing that, you're bound to be successful. But do learn your craft. Go right. to conferences, start out small, and keep submitting.
Very great.
Anne Mary, one of the things I'd like for you to talk about a little bit is just because you, romantic homes and Victorian homes, you know, they have gigantic
circulation.
What's that word I was looking for? Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Do you take submissions from freelance writers? Because I know you have a lot of your established writers, but mm-hmm. talk to us a little bit about just about that. You know,
okay.
For people that want to kind of break into this, I want people to be encouraged.
That's right. Right. Well, for our magazine, or really any magazine, I think one of the things that's going to help is if you contact the editorial department and ask or request for the editorial calendar. And a lot of times, now with our magazine, it's not the case, but with a lot of magazines, the editorial calendar is online. It might be in the section of the website that deals with advertising. But the editorial calendar will let you know months ahead of time what the theme is going to be for that mm-hmm. issue. And it may even have sub-themes. And so let's say you're writing a certain story. When you look at the editorial calendar, you can go, oh, my gosh, I need to get that in for their Mother's Day issue. Mm-hmm. Another thing to always keep in mind is editors are always looking for stories that deal with holiday issues, you know, mm-hmm. Mother's Day, Father's Day, maybe graduation. A lot of magazines have a focus in June on weddings. Christmas is a big deal. Thanksgiving is a big deal. So if you can plan a story theme or even adjust a story theme so that it fits in with a holiday. But always keep in mind, I think a lot of people tend to think magazines work about 3 months in advance. They work more like 6 to 12 months in advance.
Yes.
And like right now I'm working on Christmas of 2006.
Wow.
And so that's not the only issue I'm working on. I'm working on April of 2006. And I actually think I have most of my editorial calendar put together for 2007. With our magazines, they're very photo driven. So that means that there needs to be a home that is attached to the story idea. We don't run stories without photos. That doesn't mean I would expect you to have professional photos, just scouting photos. But just to give you an idea of a story idea that we're kind of kicking around right now, and I'm kind of excited. I hope that the scouting photos will live up to the idea. Is this is a Victorian home that was part of the Underground Railroad. And I just think that is a fascinating concept. And I think, and another thing editors are always looking for is the all wonderful, inclusive cover blurb, the story that you can actually write about on the cover in maybe 5 words or less. And to me, Underground Railroad is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I'm really trying to see if we can find a way to get that to work. There is no substitution for studying the craft of writing. And that includes... Excuse me, that includes grammar.
Punctuation.
Grammar, punctuation, clarity. Something that's very important to me is rhythm. There's got to be a music. There's got to be a musical quality to the writing.
Would you also agree that opening with a good hook for your
story? I can't even begin to tell you how important that is, and that's something I'm trying to... I know that, you know, the writers that I have right now, they've been working with the magazine for a long time, but that's something that I want to begin to incorporate a little bit more. I just, in fiction, you can't get past the structure. In nonfiction, you can't get past the structure of story. You can't pretend that just give me the facts and that's all you need. You need a really good beginning, a good middle, and a fantastic closing. And what BJ just said is so important. If you can give me a good beginning to a story, you know, we can work on everything else. But if I don't have a good beginning and I don't have some meat, it's kind of hard for me to
if it doesn't capture your event, if it doesn't capture you, then you're not going to continue to read.
Right.
And one of the things, again, even to come back to Barbara's book, she's got a great little chapter in her book, Pen on Fire, called First Lines.
Right.
And I love that because she actually uses it a little bit as a writing exercise for just, you know, jotting down first lines and using it as free writing exercises. But one of the things that people can do, like they could take a Victorian Holmes magazine, go through that magazine, just circle the opening line, the opening paragraph in those magazines. See what kind of is their style? What is it they're looking for? What kind of imagery? One of the things I absolutely love about the Romantic Holmes magazine and Victorian Holmes, even though I actually am not in a position right now where I'm actually living with someone, so I'm not making my own little home. So I don't have my own little Victorian home, but I love that the imagery, the, like you said, the rhythm, the imagery. When I read an article from Victorian Holmes or Romantic Holmes, it takes me away somewhere. It's kind of like the Calgon bath experience with regards to the home, you know, or the, and what the, it engages the senses. One of the things I love, there was a piece that you had written, I wish I had brought it in with me, in fact, that you had written, and I just loved it because it actually, I felt every one of my senses was engaged. The olfactory, you know, I could feel the texture of the fabrics simply by the description of the words on the page. And that's something that I love about Romantic Holmes magazines. It takes me there. Now, people, you know, in a golf magazine or something, it's going to take them off to the fairway and the green and all of that kind of thing.
One of the things about, I think, about our two magazines is they aren't just about the home. They're about the dream that is behind the home. And so even if you don't have a Victorian home or you don't have a romantic home, you can still get caught up in the dream and the image, like you said, the imagery or the fantasy behind it. And you can actually feel like you have one of those homes just by spending an hour or two in the pages. And I think that's really fun.
And with BJ, with guideposts, one of the things I love about guideposts is that I always am inspired. You know, you'll always find stories and words, language in there that that wants to inspire hope, courage.
Inspirational magazine, definitely. I think if you study the magazine you're submitting to, that's the most important thing. If you write, if you want to write a guidepost story, there is a way. If you study the magazine, you'll see sort of the formula for writing a guidepost story, and they are always upbeat. It's not real negative. They are in the business of cheering people up. That's what it is—an inspirational magazine. So you want to be sure that your writing is in tune with that. And if you're writing a story for any other magazine, you want to know what their rhythm and tone is and how their stories come across and what they're hoping to achieve for their readers. So you have to put yourself in the place of the editor and say, is this story going to meet the needs of the reader of the magazine? And
then
write to those needs. And put yourself and your ego aside because sometimes you think, oh, this is a great story and it should be in that magazine. Well, it may not fit with that magazine. It may not fit with the readership. And either send it somewhere else or change it to fit what the magazine needs. And when you do submit your work, do be willing to work with the editor in changing it and tweaking it, as Mary said, because you can't be married to those words. They are going to be tweaked and twiddled with and changed, and you have to realize that it's for the betterment of the magazine that they do that. And you have to put aside your feelings as a writer. If you want to be published, if you want to be successful and you want to be paid, you have to realize that that's going to happen. It's the business.
And the fact is that you're your message, whatever it is that your passion was for writing that article, is going to be conveyed. Mm-hmm. You know, you may think, oh, well, they changed this sentence
they
and they changed
sentence
this.
Out.
But the fact is that, yes, they did, mm-hmm. but the reader is still getting the message. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that if you're not willing to work with editors and allow that to happen, because, you know, the publisher knows what types of stories their readers want. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're work is not going to get published. And then guess what? Nobody.
Right.
Nobody hears your story. Right. Nobody hears your message. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I it's like an interest. It's like a marriage,
yes.
you know.
Yes.
You pick your battles.
Yes.
And you celebrate your wins. And
you end up, yeah.
And, and hopefully you both have a good time.
And do remember to meet their guidelines. Whatever the magazine's guidelines are, as Mary was saying earlier, submit according to their guidelines. If they say they want 800 to 1,000 words, mm-hmm. don't send them an article that's 1,500 words or right. 1,200 words. Right. Do keep it. In the chicken soup realm, they always want articles, stories mm-hmm. that are within a certain word length. I mm-hmm. believe it's 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've even reduced their word count, too, down to 1,000.
Yeah.
But don't send them long stories thinking, oh, they'll clean it up or they'll edit it the way they want it. No, they need the stories in the word count that they've asked for.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just too cumbersome. They'll put your story aside and say, she didn't meet the guidelines, and I'll go on to other stories who did. So you want to make sure you do what they ask you to do.
Yeah, Mary, if you could talk a little bit about that too.
Another thing I'd like to say is if you're submitting a story to someone, let's say you've already been commissioned to do the story or you're in that first process of submitting, always think of sidebar ideas. You can't believe how important those sidebars are.
And sidebars, just, you know, for people that may not be completely familiar with that mm-hmm. Term, those are those little columns kind of on the sides of the articles,
right.
you know.
Sometimes in a colored box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had one writer recently write an article for me, someone I absolutely love, but she wrote an article for me on Arbor Lodge, which is the home of the guy who actually started Arbor Day. Obviously, he's not alive anymore. It's a museum today. But I asked her to do a sidebar for me on historical facts, something to do with historical facts. Because I needed cover blurbs, and she put together a sidebar for me that was fantastic. It was 10 ways to ensure historical authenticity, and I got a cover blurb out of that. So she's my little hero, you know. Thank you, Melissa. Love you. She used to be an editor on the magazine. But, yeah, what BJ said, you know, if you make your story too long, yes, I understand that there was an awful lot to write about, but what you've done is you've taken probably, believe it or not, maybe 2 to 3 hours out of our work day, and it just slows everything down, especially if we're on deadline. If you turn something in late, oh, gosh, that's really hard for us because we have got a really firm deadline of when our magazine has to get to the mm-hmm. printer. And if somebody gets something to me too late, their story probably isn't even going to get in the magazine. Even if it was, you know, even if we signed a contract, if it's late, I'm going to have to put something else in there.
Right.
And I do have some, you know, that I kind of have sitting in the sidelines if something comes in too late. Again, grammar, punctuation.
Fine-tune your writing.
Yeah, there's something I would call...
Submit your best work.
Mm-hmm. There's something I would call dead writing, meaning you didn't put any life in it. You didn't give me enough details. I need facts. For Victorian homes, you've got to give me, like, what kind of wood is that? What style is that?
Mm.
What's the age of the home? What's the history of the home? What did these people do when they were renovating? I need details. And if you don't, then I've got a dead story. And mm-hmm. and then if you add dead writing on top of that, it's like we're in there going, can we make it come alive? Come on, here, see if you can breathe some life into this thing. Because we don't always have time to send it back to the writer.
I think that's where writers' groups really help. I think if you're in a group of writers and you bring a story that you want to submit somewhere and you read it out loud to your writers group, they can tell you, gee, that's flat. No, that doesn't move me. Or mm-hmm. can you add some life to that?
Mm-hmm. Or even sometimes they'll suggest a specific thing, like you say, something about the tree. Well, what if he said a spruce? And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, you know?
Exactly.
And sometimes it just didn't occur to you to use a more specific, you know, word mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
And then attending writers' conferences, too.
Absolutely.
Where you can learn your craft, you can meet with other writers, you can network,
mm-hmm.
you can go back to the basics. A lot of writers' conferences have basic classes on how to write an opening hook,
right.
how to be descriptive, how to be visual.
And there are all kinds of writers' conferences around. I know we go to usually the Mount Hermon Christian yes. Writers Conference, which is a wonderful 5-day mm-hmm. Writers Conference up in just south of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you get to meet with editors, authors. And I think one of the things that and they're also one day. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of places.
Yes.
And online, there's all kinds of resources for mm-hmm. writers' conferences and seminars. I think, too, just as a writer, a lot of times we feel like we're – because writing is a solitary exercise. It's you and the paper and the words mm-hmm. and your story. And so we forget sometimes that other people are, you know – are going through some of the same challenges. They have a story and they've submitted it 5 places mm-hmm. and nobody's picked it up yet. And yet other, you know, people read it and go, oh, I love this idea. And so I think it helps us just as writers to connect with other people mm-hmm. who are out there doing it too and to be encouraged.
Right. And you never know what you're going to come across when you go to a writer's conference. I know when I went, of course I was there wanting to talk about my book, but I actually met some wonderful people. And I met an illustrator, Nancy Mink, absolutely fantastic illustrator that we used, you know, quite a few times in mm-hmm. romantic homes and developed a friendship with her. And I wasn't really looking to meet an illustrator at a writer's conference, but mm-hmm. I did, and it was really great.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we just have a few minutes left here. One of the things I'd like to do for our listening audience, whether they be aspiring students or people from the community or people listening through the internet, again, this is, oh gosh, I got so caught up. This is 88.9 FM KUCI broadcasting from Irvine and also through the internet at KUCI.org. But I know I have a few things. One of the things that I think we need to do, you know, for even as writers or editors, is learn how to self-edit as much as possible, like you said. And I have a couple of books. I think I asked you ladies, too, to kind of bring your 3 best books. And one thing I'd like to encourage people to do that is not a big investment, I don't think, but is very valuable, and there are a couple of writers' magazines that just have mm-hmm. all kinds of great mm-hmm. helps. One of those is called Writer's Digest, and mm-hmm. the other one is The Writer. Both of those mm-hmm. are available through, you know, Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to them, like $24 a year, and they give you information on, you know, writing fiction, writing nonfiction. There's mm-hmm. grammar helps. Those are great resources, I think, for anybody just, you know, maybe even just thinking about, you know, maybe I want to write something. They even have things in the back sometimes about startup publications and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So those 2 magazines are great. Byra DeMarco Barrett's book, Pen on Fire, is great. Again, her show is on Thursdays from 5 to 6. Her website is penonfire.com. There's one little book that I would love to mention called Edit Yourself by Bruce Ross Larson, a manual for everyone who works with words. This is just a little, great little book. I don't know why, but I always find myself deferring to this. It has everything from, you know, how to cut the fat, what editors cut, change, and compare, and I found it's really true. It talks about parallel constructions, the active voice, abused relatives. Another book by Patricia O'Connor, Woe Is I, is a great little helps book. You guys have a couple of things that are special, that you would like to especially recommend to people, just, you know, because there's so many writing books and editing books out there. If you had to put together a little library of, say, 10 books, mm-hmm. what would be at least a few of those that you would want, you would suggest people include if they want to?
One of my all-time favorites is Self-Editing for Fiction Writers,
mm-hmm.
and the authors are Brown and King. I use that a lot, especially, you know, when I was first writing, I used it a lot. I think it's fantastic. And I think a lot of the helps that, whether they're for nonfiction or fiction, you know, they cross the barrier. It really doesn't matter. I also think that there is no substitute for good writing, even if you're trying to develop fiction, even if you're trying to develop an editing skill. And so I love Building Fiction, How to Develop Plot and Structure by, I believe it's Kirchival, Jesse Lee Kirchival. I also really love The Writer's Mentor. That's by Kathleen Rountree, Rountree. That book really helped me through a major writer's block that I was going through one time.
Great.
And then, of course, you know, style guides.
Absolutely.
Whether it's the Chicago Manual of Style or the AP, you know, style guide or the Greg's Manual.
And it helps to find out what style guide the publication that you want to write for, you can find out actually kind of what style guide they
Right. Although I'd like to say there's a myth involved in that just a little bit. If you use a style guide and you're consistent, that's what's important.
Okay.
You know, once you, if you turn something in that is consistent to the style guide you have used and you send it, it's not going to get kicked back because you didn't use their same style guide. They're going to go and they'll go, oh, you know what? This is our, believe me, the editor will still talk to you. Yeah. So
definitely be consistent.
Yeah.
And I would say, even with a style guide, I would say the most important thing is to study the way the magazine does certain things. Do they use commas to set off lists? Do they not? That the word T-O-O, too, is not being commented before and after anymore so much. And just watch what you're submitting to and how they do certain things so that you do it their way. They're going to love you for that.
Right.
There are many books on proofreading yourself. And the Proofreader's Easy Guide to Grammar is a really good book by American Business Communications written by Dan Klein.
It looks really good.
Yeah, that's a really good book because it's the nuts and bolts of where do you put a comma? When do you use a semicolon? Things of that nature. That are very important to writers. You want to look professional. You want to do it the right way.
Well, I see when you were flipping through that, it also had the editor's marks, the proofreading marks, which are really important. I mean, like if you turn in a manuscript and the editor sends it back to you, you better know what those marks mean.
Right.
And ladies, you know what? We are out of time.
Oh, it's been great.
Thank you both so much for being here.
Yes.
Again, I just want to let people know this is Tani Tenuviel on What Would Arwen Do, our special show today, Editors on Editing. And my special in-studio guests were Mary DiStefano, editor of Victorian Homes Magazine, contributing editor of Romantic Homes Magazine. And her website is MaryDiStefano.com, and that's MerrieDiStefano.com. In case you don't get that information, you can always email me at whatwouldarwendo@yahoo.com, and I can get that information to you. And my other special guest, BJ Taylor, who has a book called Successful Writers Don't Write Alone, How to Develop a Successful Writers Group. You can get information about that at her website, which is www.click.to/BJTaylor. And this is it. I'd like to also just invite everyone to please, if you want to get published, you want to be a writer, tune in to Barbara DeMarco Barrett's show on Thursdays, Writers on Writing, from 5 to 6 p.m. And I hope you'll join me again in 2 weeks with What Would Arwen Do is going to be back. And my special guest, I believe, I'm hopeful, is going to be Patricia Hirsch. And we're going to be talking about how to design your life. She is a life coach. I think it's going to be a very, very exciting show about, you know, how to design the life that you've always loved or wanted to have. So anyway, thank you all for being here. And until, thank you both.
Thank you.
You guys are so wonderful.
We love you, Tani.
Thanks. I love you guys too.
Anyway,
coming up next, please stay tuned because we got music coming up this morning. We have, of course, I love KUCI. Firehouse Rock coming up with the sweetest reggae on the radio with King Pablo.